Just a sec. Welcome to this episode of the Bone Coach Show. Joining us today is Misty Williams. Misty spent years struggling to reclaim her health and vitality after a brain fog and fatigue tailspin from life-threatening complications from surgery to remove an ovarian cyst. Afterward, her doctor told her she had endometriosis. The only remedies were drugs and surgery. Her labs were normal, and she could Google to learn more about what was happening to her body. At 35 years old, Misty started fighting for her quality of life, enduring many more challenges on her road to healing, including an unexplained 45-pound weight gain, debilitating brain fog, fatigue, hypothyroidism, and premature ovarian failure. She founded HealingRosie.com to provide high-performing women with the resources and community to successfully confront the unexpected chronic health issues that women often experience as they age. And, you know, Misty has been a great friend, and I absolutely love putting her in front of our audience because she's got some great things to share, and she's got some great upcoming events too. So Misty, great to have you here.
I'm so excited. Thank you, Kevin. Great to be here.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad you're here. So I would love for you to share a little bit about the interesting journey that you've had too. Let's just start at the beginning. I mean, your journey started with a routine physical where you asked your doctor to do an ultrasound because you were 35, you're single, concerned about your ability to have children. And what did the doctors find?
The doctors found a cyst on my left ovary. My primary care doc referred me for an ultrasound and they checked everything out. I actually remember the tech pushing on my abdomen while they were doing the ultrasound. She had just said, "I can't tell you anything I'm seeing on the screen. You're going to have to wait and hear from your doctor." Then she started pressing around my abdomen. She goes, "Does that hurt?" I was like, "No, it doesn't hurt. You're sure that doesn't hurt?" She kept pushing. "It doesn't hurt. No." And of course, you can't tell me anything that's happening. And I was like, "What? Uh-oh, I think, I don't know." But yeah, I had a cyst on my left ovary and booked a surgery for a week later. It was a routine surgery. So it was, you go in, the surgery is 20 minutes. They put you in a room to basically wake up and then they send you home and you recover at home. So it seemed like it would be pretty benign, nondescript. And I went in a week later. I didn't tell any of my friends. I did tell my mom. And they did the surgery and I woke up in the waiting or the, whatever the room, recovery room, feeling like I was coming up from a deep, deep sleep. I remember it just being so hard to wake up. Like even as I was waking up, I just wanted to go back to sleep. And I found out later that they had actually spent 2.5 hours. So I was under a lot longer than they expected because once they opened me up, they found endometriosis. I had scar tissue all over my abdomen from the endo and they had to remove all that scar tissue, took a couple extra hours. And then they sent me home with the sheet that said, "Here's all the things that could go wrong. And here's what you do if any of them go wrong." And vomiting was not on the list. And that's what I started doing about 6 or 8 hours after I got home. I started throwing up and I just kept throwing up and kept throwing up and kept throwing up. So for the next 6 days, I tried to get a hold of my doctor, couldn't reach her, couldn't reach anyone from her office. I just left a bunch of messages. And on Monday, the surgery was on a Thursday. On Monday, we were supposed to have a follow-up phone consult. This is actually the day before telemedicine, which is really common now to do consults like what you and I are doing with your doctor. So it seemed very impersonal to me at the time. And at 4 o'clock when we were supposed to talk, I didn't hear anything. She didn't call. So I called the office about 20 minutes later and they said that she'd gone home sick that day. Nobody called me. And I knew then that I can't count on this office for anything. You know, I'd already left tons of messages explaining my situation. So on Tuesday, I was there at 9 o'clock when the doors opened and I told them I was there to see the doctor. And they said, "She's not going to be until 12:30. Why don't you come back?" And I said, "Nope, I will wait." And I sat down in the waiting room and I was just prepared to wait for as long as I had to wait. And about 10:30, she calls and tells me that she's really sorry. I still don't know what happened that day, that not just day, that whole 6 days. "I'm sorry, go across the street to Baptist Hospital, to the emergency room. They're going to be ready for you," which all of that was like to the emergency room. It felt scary. I didn't know what was happening in my body, but, I wasn't like profusely bleeding, right? I just, you know, wasn't able to keep down food or drink. So I went to the emergency room and they wheeled me back for an MRI and found that she'd stitched up part of my small intestine on the way out. And that's why I wasn't keeping down food or drink. So they had to wheel me back. we did another surgery and they admitted me to the hospital this time for observation. And I went home after about 3 days and I didn't sleep for 144 hours. My body was under, I know now at the time I had no clue what was happening. And even in night after night of not sleeping a wink, I was utterly exhausted. I did not ever call the doctor's office because, you know, I had this experience already with her that it doesn't matter if I call, you know? So I just kind of suffered by myself. I had a friend that I reached out to, give me a breathing exercise. And told me this breathing pattern that he wanted me to do. And I remember hanging up the phone and I went immediately over, sat down at the foot of my bed, started doing the breathing exercise. And after about an hour, I started dozing off. It was the first time in 6 days. I was utterly, utterly, utterly exhausted. So breath work helped me sleep. That's a very important note for those of you who are having trouble sleeping. Or just in general, find that your sympathetic nervous system is overly activated all the time. And you pretty much probably know who you are if that's you. Breath work was really, really helpful. And I was finally able to sleep again, but I started unraveling further. I started having debilitating brain fog. It's like my mind was filled with cotton balls and my thoughts couldn't get through. I started dealing with lots of fatigue, like extra fatigue. Before this, I was running half marathons. I was an entrepreneur, you know, I was Miss Performer all the time. So this whole experience was just like jarring and scary for me. Like, what is happening to my body now? They did, when they opened me up for the endometriosis, they did remove my left ovary, or they opened me up for the cyst and found the endo. They removed my left ovary. So I was down an ovary and I'm sure there were some hormonal adjustments that my body was going through, but it went on for a very long time. And I remember going back to my doctor for the follow-up appointment about 2 weeks later. So I had started sleeping by then, but I was still a zombie. I remember feeling like a zombie in her office. And she told me that I had endometriosis and I said, all right, you've diagnosed me with a disease. What do I need to do? I'll do anything. Do I need to change my diet? That was the main thing I thought, like, oh, I have a disease. I probably need to change something about my diet. Do I need to change anything in my lifestyle? And she said, we don't know what causes endometriosis. You can Google it. I can put you on birth control and we can do surgery if it comes back. And immediately, you know, after this terrible patient experience where I definitely didn't feel cared for, alarm bells started going off in my head, like, okay, so I basically walked in with a big dollar sign on my forehead of, oh, you found another cyst that you get to do surgery on. It wasn't about my health as a patient, you know, that was very confronting to me because I had an assumption and a belief. We had a great family doctor growing up who very much cared about us and we could tell that he cared in the way that he really looked after our family. So it was just jarring to see that I didn't really matter to her from a perspective of, let me help you get your health back. Let me help you get your life back. Let me help you keep these things from happening to you. So I never went back to her again, as you can imagine. And I started working with a chiropractor who, one of his first questions to me was, how's your sleep? And my sleep at that point, my belief was my sleep is fine. I don't have any trouble falling asleep. I go to sleep at about 2 a.m. and sleep about 7 hours a night and wake up feeling like I've been hit by a Mack truck and waking up from death. But because it was so normal to me, I just thought that's how it was when you woke up in the morning. I was like, I'm not a morning person. You know, I don't like waking up in the morning. And I just thought that was how I was wired. And he gave me a little schooling. It's like, nope, that's actually not true. You should wake up feeling refreshed and ready for the day. And I'm just like, what is that? Like I had never had that experience in my life, you know? So I started down the path to figuring out, you know, what do I need to do and how do I get my life back? And sleep was a big part of that for me. I actually did a whole masterclass on sleep last year and the year before. I did it 2 years in a row because it's a topic that I'm so passionate about because sleeping is when we heal, you know, and if you're not sleeping, you're not healing. And all the time that we spend on working with doctors and practitioners and doing these protocols and making these lifestyle changes, and then we're not sleeping at night. It's crazy, you know?
So let's unpack that for a second, because sleep is such an important part of rebuilding your muscles, your bones. Why do women have trouble sleeping?
It's a big question. You know, there's a whole lot of reasons why we could have trouble sleeping. Not the least of which is just dealing with stress. Think of I had all this cortisol built up in my system from 6 days of not being able to digest food, right? And so cortisol buildup, and then I didn't sleep for 6 days. So there's all sorts of reasons why we have cortisol buildup in our systems. You know, this is why when you're going through something stressful in your life, keeps you up at night, right? It's because you have so much cortisol that your body can't make your neurotransmitters that you need for sleep. So, so that's a big one for women is stress. And another one is low hormones. If women have low progesterone, they'll have trouble falling asleep. If they have low estrogen, they'll have trouble staying asleep. When we are in our sympathetic nervous system too much, we really mess up that delicate balance. So there's a lot of reasons why someone could be having trouble sleeping, but I would think fundamentally, those are probably the foundational piece. You know, why your hormones are low could be 100 different things, right? Why you have high cortisol could probably be thousands of things. But you know, we generally can kind of evaluate and see that we have a lot of stress in our lives, you know, and that could be affecting our sleep. I've had sleep challenges for some of it's just patterning. We've really messed up our circadian pattern, which was what I did. I spent my entire from 18 to 35 my health journey started, I never went to bed before 2 a.m. And when I was in college, I didn't go to bed before 4 a.m. So I just was a chronic night owl, and I just messed up that delicate balance in the body of when we're supposed to go to sleep. So, you know, it's a lot of it's lifestyle oriented. I mean, probably all of these go back to something in our lifestyle, you know, that's contraindicated for sleep. So,
and what are some of the, you know, what are some of the challenges people have with even just their, I think environment plays a role in that too.
Yeah. Right? Huge.
So what are some of the factors that play into somebody's environment that may be affecting their sleep also?
Yeah. Well, light is a big problem for sleep. You know, if you've been around the ancestral health, functional medicine space, you've probably heard people talking about circadian rhythms and light cycles, and our bodies have nerves and our Sarah, however you say the chrismatic nucleus that's behind our eyes, you know,
chiasmatic.
There you go. You got it better than me. And then we also have in our red blood cells, we've got little blue light sensors that when our red blood cells pick up on blue light, it sends a signal back to our brain to suppress melatonin. So you think about these artificial environments that we live in where there's light all the time. We have light in our homes. If you go to my parents' house at night, they have all the lights on so bright. And it's for me, it's like, cause at our house, we don't do that, you know? And my dad's story is I need to see. So, you know, we're sending signals, our body's picking up signals that are contraindicated for sleep. And it creates a lot of sleep challenges. We sleep in rooms that really aren't dark. You should be able to hold your hand up in front of your face and not see it. So if you can see your hand, your room is too bright. I remember the first time someone challenged me, it was Dr. Ann Shippey. She challenged me to hold my hand up at night in front of my face. And I could totally see it in my room, which was dark, right? I thought it was dark. And turns out there's smoke detector light and there's a light on the air filter across the room and light coming in. The blinds were closed, right? But there was still light coming in around the blinds. And I had my curling iron plugged in. It was off, but there's still a light in the bathroom, you know, that's in the master shining. There's all sorts of things you could have. There was times in my previous place where the moon would be coming in the windows in the living room. And then that would come in under the bedroom door, right? So there's just all sorts of ways that we have light in our space. So cleaning all that up and making it so that it's pitch black in your room makes it so that you sleep through the night. It makes a huge, huge difference. In fact, my mom, who I've talked to you a lot about, Kevin, because she has osteoporosis and we're really working on helping her heal right now. One of the first things we got serious about was her sleep because she just was not sleeping, waking up many times throughout the night. She would sometimes wake up and not be able to fall back asleep. And of course it makes her a zombie during the day. And when we blacked out her room, I brought room darkening curtains to her. We did all the things to make sure there's no light in her room. She called me the next day and she was like, "Misty," it was kind of shocking for her. She said, "I only woke up once to pee and it was at 6 a.m. Yeah. I was like, "Yep, I know. This is what light does. It just keeps, when you have light in your space, your body doesn't build up enough melatonin for you to get into deep sleep, right? So you stay in this shallow sleep and it's just a lot easier when you're cycling through the sleep cycle for you to wake up. So dark is really important and so is cold. So is cold. In fact, I just had an experience a couple nights ago where I woke up at 2:30 in the morning. I was hot and sweaty. Roderick was hot and sweaty. He actually had been sick and had a fever. So there was, I was probably hot because he was hot. Right. And I laid there in bed for almost 2 hours and I was like, what is the deal? Why am I not sleeping? Because that's not my normal experience. I'm actually a really great sleeper. And I just got this little intuitive hit to turn the temperature down in the room. Cause obviously I'm warm within about 20 minutes. Turning the thermostat down and cooling the room just a little bit more, went back to sleep, sleeping great. So we actually just adjusted our nighttime temperature to be a little cooler. Cause it absolutely affects your sleep at night. You know, sleeping in a cave. Think of a hibernation in a bear, you know, when it's cold, they sleep. And we sleep a lot better whenever it's cold. So dark and cold is important. The light, you know, really managing light in your environment. We have amber bulbs in our bedroom. I wear amber glasses at night. If you ever see me out at an event and it's dark, you're probably going to see me with amber glasses on. I'm very consistent. I have been for a decade and it makes a big, big difference in your sleep. So yeah, environment's really, really important for sleep.
Yeah. And I want to, I just want to touch on something that you had just mentioned too, which was, you know, sleep kind of starts at the beginning of the day. You need to, it's almost like you have to optimize and prime your circadian rhythm and get it to where it needs to be. And that starts at the beginning of the day. So you've got to get, you know, that 15 to 30 minutes of sunlight on your eyes without sunglasses. And I'm not saying go stare at the sun, but at least get it, you know, on your eyes or first thing in the morning. And what happens is you've got that natural blue light that comes in from the sun's rays, and that's picked up by that suprachiasmatic nucleus in your brain. And then that's your primary circadian pacemaker, which is that's a powerful, powerful tool. And it's cueing that, hey, it's daytime. It's time to be up and be active. That's why bright light is the most effective way to communicate that for your circadian rhythm. So
yeah, you could actually test this. You can test to see if you've got a good circadian curve with the salivary cortisol test. If you do a salivary cortisol and you have a curve that starts higher in the day, it might, when you wake up, it might go up just a little bit more and then it drops throughout the day and it's low at bedtime, then you probably have really good light hygiene, right? If you have a curve that like starts low in the day and then throughout the day goes up, which a lot of people do, then light cycles is the number one reason why that curve is messed up. So it's a pretty inexpensive test. I think it's like $100 or something for a salivary cortisol as far as testing goes. But if the light thing speaks to you and you're like, you know, maybe that's why I messed up, you can actually test to see. But it makes a big, big difference when you set it in the morning, get that cortisol surge from the light hitting your eyes, just as you said, Kevin, and then start managing what your body is exposed to after dark. It'll make a huge difference. In fact, I am 100% at friends who I've said, try amber glasses, see if it helps your sleep. 100% of friends over a decade have reported back, wow, that made such a difference for me in my sleep.
Yeah. And there are a lot of things that you can do. I mean, avoiding blue lights and screens in the evenings, that blue light, again, if you're looking at your screen right before you're going to bed, that's communicating daylight to your eyes. So that's definitely not something you want. And then if you do get those, amber glasses, that's, you can get a good pair for what, $30 probably. You can get some, there are some different priced ones, but, that's really going to help you out too. So I would love for you to talk a little bit about Misty. You've got this upcoming event that you've put together, and depending on when you're listening to this, right, we'll still have the show notes that you can access and listen to, and click on the links there too. But tell me a little bit about the event that you've got coming up for Radical Healing Masterclass that you put together.
Yeah. Radical Healing, Detox Your Stress and Stressors. You know, I've done a few of these events now. They're really a labor of love, to really help educate on different topics. But I'm 10 years into my journey and I've had a lot of wins over the years. I'm completely asymptomatic for endometriosis. I've been able to fix my sleep, which has massively improved my quality of life. But I've also had additional challenges besides what started my journey. I had mercury filling improperly drilled for my teeth in 2013. Of course, I didn't know that it was being improperly drilled. How do you know, you know, unless you've actually made it a point to study something like that? But I did also have a 45-pound mysterious weight gain in 2013 going into 2014. And that was super scary and confronting, especially because at that point I had done all the things. I had cleaned up my diet. I was fully paleo, gluten-free. I had cleaned up my environment, no chemicals in my home. My house was hardwired, no Wi-Fi. Like I literally had done everything that I knew to do. I'd worked on my sleep. I'd fixed my sleep patterns. And here I was gaining 45 pounds. I was working out with the trainer. Like it was just bonkers. And I put it together in 2018. Oh, that was because the mercury fillings were improperly drilled from my mouth. Cause I heard another talk on an event where people were talking about what mercury does to the body and how it affects the body. So that was my first overt experience with toxicity. And I started learning a lot about what I needed to do to detoxify. And in 2019, I had lost the 45 pounds. I'd kept it off for several years. And in 2019, I started gaining weight again. We checked my labs. I was showing hypothyroid, like legit hypo, not clinical hypo. So something was crashing my thyroid. And I remember working with my doctor on all of this, and we tried all these different things. She obviously put me on thyroid support, and I was not able to lose the weight. I tried every trick, and my body just did not want to let go. So last summer, or right before the summer, I went to my doctor, and I was actually like choking back the tears because Roderick and I want to get married, and I don't want to get married. Finally, you know, in my 40s, found the love of my life, carrying 15 extra pounds. I had also been feeling just this stress around knowing what carrying extra weight does to your body. Like I'm in the natural health space, right? Knowing that that inflammation is in my system and what is it doing to my body and my brain long-term was really scary and confronting for me too. So I started pushing. We've got to test. We've got to uncover what these deep stressors are. Now, this is a doctor that I've been working with since 2014 when I moved to Austin. She's always been very supportive, right? But I will say that every single time I've gotten a breakthrough or figured out something else, like another puzzle piece of my health, it's always been me advocating. And that's really like what I want to model for the women in the Healing Rosie community. And what I want to teach people how to do is really how you advocate for yourself, because there's so many pieces to this puzzle that you need to seek the answers for, and you need to take initiative around. And that's not always what we want to hear. I would love it if I could say, here's this certain special doctor that you go to, and they're going to like inventory and figure everything out for you. It doesn't happen. It hasn't been my experience. I have thousands and thousands of women in our community. It's not their experience. So anyway, I pushed, and she said, all right, well, let's do the oat test. Let's do a mycotoxin test and see what that turns up. She also did a couple extra blood tests. I had a couple inflammatory markers in my blood work come back like off the charts high, where she's like, well, there's something in here, you know? And we found out that I had a fungal infection, and I also had mold toxicity. Now, I wasn't the classic mold patient, meaning typically you think of mold being associated with severe neurological issues. And I wasn't exhibiting that. I was having a little bit of brain fog, but it was like some forgetfulness, right? But it wasn't the neurological issues that I heard women in my community who had mold toxicity talk about, right? So it really got my attention that I had this in my body and didn't know it. And then I started doing some research in our community and asking a lot of the women, you know, that had mold toxicity, what their experience. And I started asking different practitioners, like when you test people for mold, how many people are positive? And it's like a vast majority of people are positive whenever they're actually tested for mold, which just really like was confronting to me again of, holy crap, this is something that's affecting our health. We don't see it. It's insidious. Most of the time we're not tested for it. You know, it's only the doctors that even know how to test for it. And it's, as women, especially, it's affecting our bodies. It's affecting us hormonally. It's affecting our quality of life. The reason that I have fungus is because I have mold, right? Because they dance together. So I really wanted to do an event where we really broke down all this toxicity stuff, because there's been so much I've uncovered in my journey that has a toxicity root to it, that if I hadn't had the education and didn't know, I wouldn't have eradicated those things. And God only knows where I would be. And I also have a sister who's almost 400 pounds, right? So she's my second, the sister right next to me in the birth order. And you know, we were raised in the same environments growing up. And there's a big difference in our personality, as you could probably imagine. I'm a lot more proactive and, you know, want to figure things out, and she doesn't, right? But I could easily be her, you know, without the knowledge that I've been able to glean over the last decade without the proactiveness, I could be my sister. So this event is really about helping people understand this toxicity dilemma, not just toxicity, but stress too. Like, what does stress do to our bodies? Because, you know, these toxic pieces are stressors for us, but we don't only get stress from an external toxic thing, you know, that we can name and label. We also experience a lot of stress in our lives, just being human, being women. I have little T trauma and big T trauma from my childhood. And I can tell you that I'm probably more affected by my little T trauma than my big T trauma as an adult. My deep spiritual work as an adult has been on that little T trauma that I endured growing up, you know? So there's a lot of things that create stress, that build up the cortisol in our system, which then creates inflammation, which then, you know, whatever your epigenetic triggers are, you're going to start expressing some kind of dis-ease in your body. So yeah, I'm super excited.
Good. And in terms of detoxing your stressors, because that's a big focus of this and radical healing, how did you, how did you go about pulling together the people that are actually contributing to this? And what are we focused on inside the actual event itself?
Yeah, well, it's almost 40 interviews. So we've got lots of interviews with a variety of experts. You know, my hope is that people, when they look at the lineup, I'm not sure that anybody could sit down and listen to 40 interviews, right? But my hope is that you'll see yourself. You know, I'm interviewing you, Kevin, about osteoporosis. My mom has osteoporosis, and we are this year, she's at a point where she's ready to get serious. So, you know, I've been ready to get serious with her for years, but she's really focusing on this, and we're walking through the process of what does she need to do to really get her life back. So she's getting sleep. She's on hormone therapy. She's started walking. We've got her a rebounder and sauna, and, you know, we're just little by little incorporating things for her. So I really thought through not only my journey and the kind of help that's been really valuable to me, but the women in the Healing Rosie community, especially those in our Facebook group. We have a super active Facebook group, and those women have reflected a lot of things back to me that have been helpful in their journeys. And I had a doctor tell me one time early in my journey that there's one reason that we get sick, and it's stress. And that's been helpful to me as a patient, because all of the disease diagnoses and, you know, everything that could go wrong can feel overwhelming. But if it just comes back to these things create stress, stress creates inflammation, and we want to eradicate the inflammation because of the disease it creates in our body, it's helped me to focus myself and ask the questions of like, what's stressing me out? So there's absolutely an external component of this. You know, we talk a lot about trauma. We talk about the spiritual practices that can really help us to process trauma, regulate our nervous system. We talk about the nervous system a lot. What's the difference between the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic nervous system? And how do we spend more time in our parasympathetic nervous system? What are the practices that help us attune more to our parasympathetic nervous system? We talk about parasympathetic tone, which is a concept that I learned from Dr. Marnie Turvill. I always kind of thought of it as you shift from one to the other, and you want to make sure that you can make the shift, right? And she was like, actually, you want to build the tone. Think of it like muscle tone, where like that system is stronger so that it can do what it needs to do on its own. It doesn't require so much like intention for you to get it to shift over. Like it's this hard thing, you know? So we explore that a lot, because I think that's a big piece of the puzzle for people, you know, certainly for me and certainly for a lot of women. You know, we are naturally very stressed out. We take on a lot of responsibility for caregiving, and it is very stressful to do so. So we explore as much as you can in a format like this. We explore all that lifestyle stuff outside, but then we also look at what are the stressors on the inside, and what are the things inside of our bodies that are insidious that you don't see, but they're there and they're wreaking havoc on your health. So we talk about gut dysbiosis. We touch on breast implant illness. We talk about heavy metals and mold. And what are the things you need to do? Dental infections is another big one. What are the things we need to do to actually detoxify from these things? What do we need to do so that the toxicity can move out of our body? And, you know, that in itself is, you know, a whole other education. So I wanted to explore the topic as thoroughly as possible, so people would see, here's the things that can be affecting you deeply and making you sick, and here's what you need to do in order to heal. So yeah,
that's
next,
great.
And next interviewing week or the week after.
Yeah, that's great. And you're interviewing the experts in their respective fields to help address these specific things. So that's great. And what we're going to do is, once this podcast and video is launched, obviously for people that are listening long-term in the future, we're going to have links in the show notes where you can still find Misty. And I'm going to have Misty tell us where people can find not only the masterclass that's going to take place probably within the next few weeks of the time of this interview, but also beyond that, where can people find you, Misty?
Yeah, healingrosie.com. If you come to healingrosie.com, you'll see a link there to our Facebook group. We have lots of freebies that you can download. We have the lab tracker there, which has actually become a pretty popular thing that people want from us. When I started advocating for myself, one of the things that was frustrating is hearing your labs are normal. Your labs are normal. Your labs are normal. And I'm like, something is wrong. I don't understand how my labs can be normal. And yet you've diagnosed me with endometriosis. I went to 6 months later, saw an endocrinologist who was feeling on my throat. And she's like, I think you have thyroid nodules. Took me back. I did. What causes it? We don't know. How do you fix it? Surgery. You know, it's kind of the same song and dance all the time. So the lab tracker actually has all the optimizing blood labs and their optimal values so that you can request the right labs yourself. And you can also see for yourself if your labs are in the optimal range or not. And what I learned is that optimal and normal are not the same thing, right? True. So it's really important that we know what optimal looks like so that we're making better decisions about our lifestyle and our health. So lab tracker's there. We've got some free guides on sleep that are there to really help people optimize their sleep space. Lots of resources there to help people.
Good stuff. Well, I'm super happy you were able to join us. I'm looking forward to this upcoming event and summit that we've got. I'll be a speaker there as well. So if you can catch me there, you can catch me there. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to link to all the resources we talked about in the show notes over at bonecoach.com/MistyWilliamsHealingRosie. I want to thank you again so much for your time, Misty, and everybody for listening. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you so much. We'll see you guys.